pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jenny, do the roll call, please.
Chair Esposito?
Here.
Vice Chair Wilson?
Here.
Board Member Brazano?
Here.
Board Member Picard?
Here.
And Board Member Schroeder is not here yet as of yet.
Board Member Brazano? Board Member Brazano?
Here.
Board Member Brazano?
Here.
Don't leave.
Don't leave.
Stay at it, that's here.
Okay. Anybody have any comments with regards to the minutes of February? With the exception to the comments that you've made.
Right, the list.
The correction of the names for attendance, names and numbers. Today we're going to cover three.
To approve it.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay.
I'll second it.
We're going to cover three issues with regard to the share plan. So what I'd like to do is kind of save them to the end so that when, Chris, you do your financing and you do your legal stuff, we won't dig into that until we're done with the regular issues. And then we'll tackle the share plan. And it's a good thing that our friend here is in the League of City. I think it's appropriate. All right, Chris.
Thank you, Charlie. So the financial report, nothing real exciting to talk about. Interestingly, we had some early in the quarter losses that were offset by gains through March 31st as the market started turning around, which gave us kind of net investment earnings for the quarter, which was nice. Other than the normal pension distributions, probably the big thing to note is the second round of share plan checks went out after the first of the year. That's that $395,000 there of share plan distributions. And you guys probably remember that a number of the retirees couldn't receive all the money in 1 year, and it spread out over multiple years, and this was phase two. There's a few people that'll still trickle over to next year, but for the most part, that finished that part of the phase. There's a little under $16,000 in expenses for the quarter. If you turn to the second page, this is kind of our quarter-by-quarter budget comparison detail. If you look at the third column from the right, those are the where it says quarter ended 3/31/16. This is a summary of the expenses for the quarter that come up with that $15,917.37. Some legal fees, actuarial fees. That's why Doug is here, is to pick up a check. And then the insurance and the normal quarterly investment management fees from the league. So nothing unusual or unexpected in there. And so far, as far as we're doing for the budget, our total budget for the year was just under $60,000 for expenses. Through half of the year, we've only spent about $20,000. So we're doing real well.
So I need to pick up my pace a little bit?
Yeah, yes, you do. The March 31st statement from the pension plan is attached, as well as the various invoices, including, Charlie had alluded to, the once-a-year insurance coverage, fiduciary coverage for the board is in here, along with all the other normal things. So that's pretty much the investment report. So I'll be looking for the board to vote to approve payment of the invoices, and then wanted to discuss the investment policy that I had sent out to everybody once we have that vote.
Report is done.
Yes, I just meant if you can approve the invoices for payment. Yeah.
I'll make a motion to approve six invoices.
Six. Listed.
Second?
Yes, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Done.
And then, Charlie, the second item is the kind of documented or written investment policy.
Yeah.
Which I talked about, it seems like forever ago, finally got a draft out for everybody to take a look at. over the last several months. And basically, the investment policy really is just what the first line of the purpose says, which is to assist the board in establishing a formal set of investment objectives and guidelines for management of plan assets. We don't really have a formal written policy. We've been going through with the city and formalizing all of our written policies. And really, the first couple of pages just kind of talks about what the general investment philosophy is, that we're looking at long term, and how the board would go about considering hiring a manager, reviewing and taking a look at the manager's performance, and then just kind of the steps that we would take on a normal basis of, okay, part of our fiduciary duty of keeping an eye on the investments and the investment manager. And then attached, which is about the fifth page in, is basically the trust fund's investment policy, which the board has adopted this as this, the official asset allocation portfolio guidelines and things like that, which, of course, you know, it, even with the Municipal Pension Trust Fund, this is periodically updated, and we would just put this in place, you know, attach it to the policy as things have changed. But again, this is their general policy. We're the 60-40 target fund is what we've selected. So this becomes our kind of our official working document of the board's investment policy. So unless anyone has any questions from anything that was in here, and Charlie and I went over it in detail, we're looking for the board to approve the policy, and then Charlie and I will sign it, and it will become an official document.
This hasn't changed since the last amendment, because I see the last amendment was June of 2015.
The amendment for the boards, this is the latest and greatest, okay, from the pension fund. The June 2015 revision that I had.
Okay, but there hasn't been any revision since then. So
not that I'm aware of.
So
no.
this is really the operative document.
Yes, okay. And what they do is they send these to me. That, you know, they say, we get them when there's changes. Then we get notifications when there's tweaks to them and what tweaks have been made and why. And we would bring that before the board in the future, you know, when we get those. Sorry, Scott.
No, I was just going to ask, did you write these first few pages?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. Just to let you know, you don't have any authority to change anything in the policy. Basically, the league is investing in the manner that they're investing, and there's nothing you can do about it unless you don't want to have them investing your assets anymore. So, but I haven't seen anybody put a kind of a prelude to the league's policy. But I just read through this, and I thought you did a pretty good job.
Okay. So, thank you.
So Scott's hiring, apparently.
he's got some talent.
But again, yeah, sure. The idea here is that, you know, for this board and for future boards, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, hey, this is what's been established of how we go about our business. And Scott's right. The board's biggest power is to tell a league to, you know, go away and we'll hire somebody else to do it. Or to even change the allocation of how the assets are invested. Those are really the two biggest things that the board can take action on if they wanted to.
Well, what you're doing is reinforcing some of the things that we should have been doing but kind of haven't been doing. For instance, in your preamble here, at least once a year the board should be meeting with the investment manager, right? And the investment manager would be...
Well, we have
the league cities, right?
And you're talking about beyond us as the administrator.
Well, so yeah, we should have, the board should have an interview once a year with somebody from the investment side, which would be the league cities.
Yeah, that,
so that's something you may look into, because now that we've attached to something to the league of cities document, we're saying here that once a year we will meet with the investment manager. Okay, so that's something that we'll have to tie into one of our board of trustee meetings, and you come down, or whoever the appointed delegate is, and give us a briefing on where we stand with the investments, and then at that time we would say, yeah, we're satisfied, no, we're not satisfied, and we continue on or look for change.
Yeah, and Charlie, my recommendation would be maybe the August meeting, because at that same time, we can reconfirm the rate of return that we're going to use for the actuarial valuation based on the information that we get from the league as far as what their expected long-term rate of return is. Because it kind of all works together if we did that at the same time.
Would the Board of Trustees, anybody want to make a motion that we establish a right now?
Well, let's first make a motion to accept the document. Let's first make a motion to accept the document, and then we can move forward on it.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make a motion to accept it as written.
I just got one other thing.
Stand by.
While we're obligated to what I just spoke about, there's also a part in here that says continuing education, which for the Board of Trustees now, for each of the trustees, we should be going through periodically some sort of review of procedures or processes. And you may recall this time you were sent out a copy of what the retirement board is doing, and they have one of these courses for new trustees and for older trustees. And anytime, we've discussed this before, anytime anybody on the board wants to go to one of them, typically they're either in Tallahassee or God knows where else, that would be, would satisfy the obligation we are again imposing upon ourselves to say, okay, we're staying current with the requirements for these types of plans.
That obligation was there before you did this, because your operating rules say you're supposed to go once a term, go to a conference or a school once a term. So that I've talked about this before.
Well, we use you did that for a while.
I have done some local ones, but I don't think you guys have been going once a term. So.
Oh, no, we haven't.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, we're reinforcing it now.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's a lot of things we can do. I mean, we can do online training. I mean, there's a lot of different training that we can set up, particularly specific to investments in general. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as a board member, and Scott, of course, can probably say this better than I can, you know, you have a responsibility to make sure you actually understand what you're invested in, you know, because I really think you're opening yourselves up for potential issues if you really don't know what you're invested in and what it means and what the terms mean. I mean, at the very least, understand the basics of what is it that we're invested in, and I'm sure the league can help us with that educational information. So there's no like number of hours requirement in there. Mm-hmm. It's just that, hey, we really should be doing this.
Yeah. Well, that would tie in with meeting with the investment manager.
Sure,
and, obviously, you know more about it than we, or otherwise we'd be doing it ourselves. So it would be good, for instance, in August, you come down and gave us some kind of a presentation on what it is, what the league thinks we ought to be invested in, and what we should be doing about it. Are we doing the best that we can do? Are we meeting our fiduciary responsibilities with respect to the members of the plan?
Because it is easy, Charlie. It's not uncommon, but it's easy to say, well, hey, we hired these guys, we're done.
Yeah.
You know, but if you really, there's still the monitoring of whoever you hire that the board has a responsibility to, you know, make sure we understand what's going on and we're cool with it.
Most of our plans have a monitor of the investment folks every quarter and have a report of how well you did during the quarter and give, you know, and they do a report for you every quarter.
They do.
So you can have them come more than once a year as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're again, I'm looking at the operating rules. I know nobody ever looks at these once we do them, but I do. And the operating rules say they'll come at least once a year and more often as directed by the board. So Jeremy, I know, would come. He goes to other boards more often than once a year. So that may be something, it may be even every 6 months, so that you stay on top of what the investments are doing and you get explanations for any questions you might have. I think that'd be a good drill to do and start doing it, like I said, at least every 6 months. I don't think there's an additional charge for you coming, right?
Yep.
So you could put that on the agenda every other time?
It would be no problem at all to do that, yeah.
Okay. I'll just take this in steps then. Approve the investment plan policy that's been presented by Chris. Anybody want to make a motion to do that?
I think there was a motion made.
Yes. I'll make a motion to approve it as written.
Okay.
And I'll second it.
Okay. Any comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Chris, that's got to be distributed. There's a form letter in the forms package for distributing the investment policy statement. I think it goes to the state, to the city, and to the actuary, I think. Okay?
Yep, and then we'll post it on the city's website, and I'll send it to to the league also. They kind of have a website for us, and we'll make sure we get it all out there. Yes, sir.
And the annual report to the mayor, that has been done. That's a requirement here.
Yes, that's right. Been done.
That's already been done.
That's already been done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything else, Chris?
No, and then Charlie, we'll all get together with you, and Ginger and I afterwards just to officially sign the official one.
Okay.
That's all.
So, Charlie, when we decided to officially get some little training, obviously it's going to be the training on the investment side.
Yeah.
We officially decided on that. Okay.
Well, in accepting this document here, in essence, we've done that, I think, right? But what we have is a comment to the League of Cities that we'd like to pick this up starting in August.
Right.
And that his report to us can be a part of our continuing education.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that should be reflected in
but is it,
we agree to that so that we're in compliance with the policy.
I was going to say, but is that sufficient to keep us in compliance?
What the state statute Party. Says is you're supposed to get a continuing education in the area of board responsibility and investments.
Right.
And you might get investments from the league, mm-hmm. but I mean you're talking about fiduciary responsibility and what have you. And frankly, if you can go to the state conference, it's an expense that is appropriately paid for by the plan. Okay. Mm-hmm. So your travel expenses and hotel and what have you is all paid for by the plan. That's an expense of doing business, and it's a legal requirement. So there should be no question of the cost of getting the training. And again, like Charlie said, I mean, you're fiduciarily responsible for all the assets that we have here, so you ought to get the training. And they have the state, the one that's done in Tallahassee, is put on by the state, and it's kind of focused on Chapter 175, 185 plans.
So it's a 3-day affair.
Yeah.
The first day is for new trustees.
Right.
Okay. Then the second and third day are for trustees that presumably know what they're doing, and their obligations are reinforced at that time, and any changes that were made on what you do and what you don't do.
Legal updates, actual updates.
Yep.
You know when the next one is?
The 16th of May.
16th
right?
of May. I sent you a copy.
Yeah, I kind of saw that, but I forgot the date. When is it?
Next week.
16,
19,
I think it is.
Next week.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
They run them, I think, every 2 or 3 months.
The state does them twice a year. They do one in Tallahassee, and then they do one typically in Central Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Orlando.
Orlando.
Yeah.
I think Orlando.
That's only twice. I thought they did more.
Well, no. FPPTA has like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. a year. That's a different organization, but there's a cost to joining that organization. But again, that's money that is appropriately mm-hmm. spent. Their conferences are a little broader. They're more focused on all trustees. I mean, general employee trustees as well. That are not subject to 175.
What does that stand for?
FPPTA, the Florida Public Pension Trustees Association,
okay.
And it's at fppta.org.
Okay.
So if you want to look it up, and maybe you could give the board some information
sure.
about that,
yeah.
That might be an appropriate expense too. It would give you a little more flexibility as to the times and when these these conferences are available.
I'll make sure we have information. I'll circulate some stuff out, but I'll make sure we bring it for sure to the next FPPTA.
Sound like you know what you're talking
about. Yeah. You got it. It's a mouthful, but you got it.
So everything we do is initial.
So let me ask you, Scott, last year when we went to the mini ones that you guys mm-hmm. do, those are...
That counts, okay. but I'll be frank with you, when we do the mini ones, we do an excellent job.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll only do it for an hour, 2 hours, okay? So, I mean, it's just so much information you can get, you know, and if you go for a couple of days, obviously you're going to get a lot more information. So we do those mini conferences just primarily for people that just can't get away and can't take 2 or 3 days off. And so we do the mini conferences that take care of that, but they're not really designed to take the place of the full conferences if you should go.
I think everybody should take at least one time anyway that the state retirement program. And even though we've been sitting on the board for a while, to take the first day as well.
Is that put on by the Division of Retirement, Scott?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'll take a look at that and see what the next one in Orlando is also.
Yeah, that would be more convenient.
Get that information out.
Anything else, Chris?
No, I think that was the last.
Okay. Anybody have any comments? Okay. Scott, you want to?
So my turn?
Yep.
Okay, talked about that. First item, let me remind everybody, your financial disclosure forms. You should be getting those in the mail shortly, and they're due on July 1st, so please be sure to fill it out and send it in to the supervisor. I won't be back, and what I do with most of my clients is you have a meeting in August, so maybe y'all can check online. Mm-hmm. at the Commission on Ethics website, and they keep track. If you file it, you'll have a little green check mark by your name, and if you don't file it, you'll have a red X by your name. And so it's probably a good idea when you file it, wait a few weeks and then look to see that they have it yeah. indicated that you have filed it, okay? Because they're September 1st, of course, the fines start, and the fines are $25 a day, and you pay the fine, not the board. So that's why I always stress and like to talk about this, but I won't be back to remind you at the next meeting. So please make sure, maybe Chris or somebody can follow
the
up.
The city clerk usually.
You all do that too? Yeah, that's good. Some places are better than others about reminding people, unfortunately. And I always tell the story. It seems like every year I have somebody who calls me in December and says, hey, I just got this letter from the state, and they're telling me they want me to pay $1,500, $1,200, and what can I do about this? And I think to myself, I hope he's going to tell me he's been in the hospital in a coma for the last few months, because if not, he's going to be writing a check.
Yeah.
But and really, they have no sense of humor about it either. They're very you have to have that kind of a reason if you don't file on.
Well, we had that. So, on our first board, we had a member who didn't file, and he was told to file. They gave him a break to file, and he didn't do it. He said, he didn't need to do that. In any event, it cost him about $3,000 by the time he was done. And there was no mercy, no discounts, nothing.
Yep. So anyway, that's just make sure everyone files it, okay?
That's the financial status report.
Disclosure.
Yeah,
disclosure.
Financial disclosure. Form number one. And you can get it, if you don't get it, by the way, if you don't get it in the mail, it doesn't mean you don't have to file it. You still have to file it.
Well, you can do it right down here at the county.
You can submit it to me, and we go down to the supervisor's office all the time. We can take it there for you at City Hall, or you can take it down to the Government Services Building or the Supervisor of Elections offices.
Gotcha.
I suggest you always obtain a copy, that stamped receipt that they received, so that if they lose it somehow, you have a copy that you submitted it on time.
So I normally go down there, hand it to them, they stamp it, and then they make a copy for me, and I get the stamped copy. But it's no laughing matter, because they are dead serious about that. Okay.
Actually, I don't think they even look at what the form says. I think they're more intent on making sure that they just have a form with your signature on it. But anyway, that's...
It does seem like that.
Really. Next item is just to update you on legislation. There were a couple of bills that were proposed in the Florida legislative session that just finished up in the last couple of months. But when the smoke cleared, nothing got adopted. So we don't have any changes that we need to make in order to comply with anything done by the Florida legislature. The only kind of a non-pension item under the public records subject, if you would, there is going to be a requirement going forward that if we hire outside service providers, that we have to put some language in the contract that indicates that the service provider contractually agrees to assist with respect to any public records requests that we might have. You can conceive of the fact that a service provider might well have documents that are pertinent to us that we don't actually have, but they would still be public records. And so as a result, this new contractual provision would obligate them to assist us if somebody requests, you know, certain types of documents that they might have that we don't have. They would contractually have to assist us in meeting that and complying with that public records request. So that's something that we'll do with any contracts that we do going forward. I don't foresee any contracts in the near future, but we're, of course, doing this across all of our clients. Next, I think you all approved the actual evaluation last time?
Yes.
Did you declare an expected rate of investment return?
No, we're going to do that for the next one.
For the next year.
Yeah, so we were going to do it in August when we had our investment update.
He's here now.
This was kind of a last minute.
I know, but he's here, so we could do it. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to do that once you approve the actuarial evaluation.
So simultaneously with the actuarial
evaluation. Well, I typically, if I'm at the meeting, I say, okay, we've approved the evaluation, now let's declare the expected rate of investment return. And I think Jeremy knows what the 60-40 expectation is and the assumed rate of return. I think we're using 7.65.
7.65,
yeah. So I would recommend doing that now and then doing the letter. So is that a reasonable expectation going forward, Jeremy?
Reasonable. Yeah. It's I would say you're within the ballpark of the median for most plans, slightly to the higher side, but nothing that would stand out or
so that's reasonable.
Say, hey, we got to really talk about this.
Yes.
Well, we based the 7.65% on the long-term expected rate of return based on the projections of the 60-40 fund.
Right.
Is that still the long-term? Has that changed? Are you prepared to tell us that now? I know this was kind of – Jeremy just contacted me last night that he was going to be in the area, so we didn't really have
to. I see him all the time. I know what he can do. What are we using in the valuation?
That's what we're using is that.
In the valuation?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're doing the valuation.
Yeah.
And Paul had provided us that analysis of whatever company you use to do that modeling of what the long-term expected rate of return was going to be on the 60-40 portfolio, and that's where we got the 7.65% from.
Yeah,
initially.
Let me ask you, at what point did you adopt the 7.65?
Well, about 2 years ago.
Okay. I would say, honestly, I don't want to speak too strong here. It might not be a horrible idea to take a look at it again in August. I don't think there's nothing that says, well, that's a bad number. It's well within the norm of what we see across the state. Like I said, it's maybe slightly to the higher side, but still.
So are we even doing better than it?
I don't know.
It depends on the year, Joe.
Okay. Yeah. Make a motion on the 7.65, but then they want to make a correction in August.
Correction to what?
That's if they say, well, we want to change that.
Well, you could always change it, but this.
That's what I'm saying.
Let me explain what we're doing here. Okay, this is a silly requirement that the legislature imposed on us several years back. And basically, it was Charles Slavin, who many of you probably don't remember, Doug does. But Charlie Slavin was at the division for 40 years or something, you know, he was there forever. And he thought it would be a good idea that boards each year, after they approve the valuation, and look at their investments and the way they're investing and come up with and determine whether the assumed rate of return that is in the valuation that they just approved, is that a reasonable assumption going forward? That's really what it's designed to do, is have you look at your assumption. Of course, you've already approved the valuation, and the valuation has, in your case, 7.65 in it. So if you come back and say, well, we expect to get 7.5 for the next year, 7 years in the long term, and we send that letter to Tallahassee, which we have to do, okay, and then they get the actual evaluation, 7.65, and they get your letter saying you expect to get 7.5, you would expect, then you would get a letter from them saying, well, if you expect 7.5 for the next year or several years in the long term, you need to change your actuarial valuation because you're assuming you're going to get 7.65. Okay? And that's really what this whole thing was designed to do. I don't think it makes sense the way it's done, but bottom line is that's what the legislature says we have to do. Now, again, like Jeremy says, is 7.65 the right number? Is 7.5? Is 7.8? I mean, there's a range of reasonableness based on a 60-40 split. So I think what he's saying is, well, your 7.65 might be a little on the higher side of the reasonable range, but certainly not out of bounds.
No.
If that's the case, we use 7.65. I wouldn't recommend declaring we're going to get something different than what we put into the valuation, or else we are going to get some pushback from the state.
Well, let me ask you this, Scott. If after the August meeting and discussion, the board feels that, well, we'd really rather go with 7.5, we can still...
You mean in the valuation?
In the valuation.
Okay, two different things. One is an expectation, one is the valuation.
Yeah.
Okay, so if in the valuation you decide before he does the valuation next year that you're going to lower the assumed rate of return, you lower it in that valuation. After you do the valuation, you declare an expected rate of return again, okay? And then you can declare
7.5. That's what I'm going to add.
Yep.
Okay, so for now, we, to be consistent with what we've done, we send a letter out at the 7.65. August, we make a determination for next year's valuation,
right,
whether we want to change it or not. Let Doug know at that point that we're going to use 7.whatever. And he's cool, and then the next cycle, that's what we'll
do. When you get the valuation, you approve it, the valuation, and then right after that, you declare an expected rate of return, which is in line with what you did.
I got you.
Shouldn't that be Doug that makes that decision?
Well, it's based on the investments.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. A reasonable expectation
of
investments.
He does more, I believe, of just what you all tell him, what you've decided.
That's probably the one assumption that he's not as much involved in as the rest of them he takes care of.
I'd give you an opinion if I thought it was an outlier too high.
Yeah, okay.
Beyond that, we look to the investment guys.
Okay.
Okay, so then we're asking the board to adopt the 7.65% long-term rate of return that we'll put in the letter to the state. And that's about all we'll do with it at this point.
Let me suggest a motion. The board, the motion would be based on the advice of our consultant and probably our actuary as well, and you're comfortable with the 7.65. Mm-hmm. Based on the advice of our investment folks as well as our actuary, the board expects to get a 7.65% investment return for the next year, the next several years, and the long term thereafter. So someone can.
That's actually in the letter.
So that's in the letter, and that's in the statute too. That's why I worded it that way.
Yeah. And Virginia, I'll get you that letter.
All right, that's what you think the motion should be.
Yeah.
Somebody just move. Okay.
I'll move to approve.
Okay. Second.
Good. Third.
Second.
Well,
you made the motion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who should make the second?
I'll make the second.
You're making the second. Okay. Any comment? All in favor?
Yeah, I think it's good.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Pension letter number one.
Gotcha. Yep.
All right. We're still on me, I guess.
Yeah.
I noticed we did a budget. Did we do an expense report, a year-end expense report for all the expenses for the previous year?
Yes.
Okay. That was the new legislation. We had to do not only a budget for next year, but then once the year was over, we had to go back and do a list. And I think you kind of do that at every meeting anyway, but it was kind of a little more formalized reporting coverage.
Yeah, and it is out on the website.
Okay, and that has to be provided to the state with the annual report. Maybe you've already done that as well. So, okay, we're good.
Yeah, it's part of the big long report. It's attached to that.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Next thing, just to let you know, we will be doing some updates to the plan document, and I don't know, we may be talking about some other changes.
About the ordinance?
Yeah, the ordinance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we have some Internal Revenue Code changes that I think I've discussed with you before that we need to do some updating to keep the plan tax qualified, again, based on reviews that are done by the firm that you know well, Ice Miller. We every couple of years, we have them reviewed. our plan document to, you know, there are differences in the plans, but all the IRS stuff is essentially the same, and we have them look at them every couple of years and tell us, based on changes in the law and regulations and what have you, they suggest changes to be made to our plan. So there are some changes we need to make to your plan, and I knew we were going to talk about some other things here today, so we can do it all at once.
Yeah.
So I just want to let you know that we need to do that.
These are changes as a consequence of legislative action, or
just our
operating process?
Has nothing to do with this plan specifically. Okay. It's basically the plan document, and of course your plan is a little different than the other plans that we have, so we need to make sure that the changes we make are applicable to your type of plan.
Okay.
It's not the same, obviously, as some of our other plans.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But this incorporates both the defined benefit and the share. Is that correct? Or we're just talking defined benefit?
No. It's the whole document.
The whole document.
And the changes that we make are not going to change the way you're doing anything. It's just basically some language changes, some clarification. Some of the changes are based on, you probably remember that this is a good, for instance, we had the Supreme Court case that on the same-sex marriages, and the definition of a spouse now is a little different than it was before, and so there's a little tweak to the definition of spouse. Those are the kinds of changes that we make, and so it's not really changing the way you're actually doing
things. I have to go home and tell my wife we got a change coming?
Yes. all right, so I have, I probably don't pronounce this, is it Wieners or...
Wieners,
okay. At some point, I guess we need to talk about that interpretation.
If you're done with everything else, I can pick up on that.
I am done with everything else.
Okay.
Unless anybody has any other questions for me.
Anybody?
Okay.
We had three issues. Now we're talking strictly share plan, okay? And a couple of issues have come up, and there's three that I'm working on now. And we've Doug, you and Scott and I have discussed these, and I'd like to get to the first one, which was under the share plan, if we had a individual who was vested and had 2 years of share plan and then left us, okay, did we have to wait until he was of retirement age to collect what he got from the share plan, not talking defined benefit, or could we precipitate a payment? And you wrote a memo on that, Scott.
And I said you didn't have to wait.
No, as a matter of fact, you said you thought that it was incumbent upon us to pay it off, not to allow them to use our investment plan.
Right.
So what I want to do is get the approval of the board to stay with that interpretation.
Somebody terminates employment or terminates participation in the plan, and they have money in the share plan.
Right.
They don't, and they leave.
Yeah.
If they're not at retirement age,
yeah,
they still have to wait till retirement age to get their defined benefit, if you will,
yes,
monthly
right.
benefit.
Right.
But they but the share can be distributed.
They have to be vested, though.
Yeah, they have to be vested, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm if you don't mind, my account. So I'm 40 years old. I have 5 years. I put 5 years in. I get 5 years of credit service. I'm now 45. During that time, $20,000 went into my share plan. So now that I'm 45 and I don't want to be a volunteer anymore, or I'm moving or something else happens, so I've got my 5 years in, I'm vested.
Mm-hmm.
I get a check for what, you know, within the limits for my share plan now,
mm-hmm.
not when I actually retire and eligible for my normal monthly benefits.
Right.
That's basically what
I'm saying. And the lump sum, of course, you can roll over, you know, keep it in an IRA or something and keep it tax deferred, but yes, the money still gets distributed.
Actually, no, we were told we couldn't do that.
Oh, that's right. You're right. I'm sorry. I always have to remember I'm talking about your plan, and it's always the rules are always different.
Yeah. So they have to basically get a check and pay taxes on it if they want the money to come out. Well, so the question is, we're not really giving these people a choice.
Right. And since they can't roll it over, they really have no choice.
They have no choice. So when you're done, when you're 5 years
vested, we force them to take their money.
We force you to take your money.
Yeah. It's,
you know, we don't want to track
We're being brutal, but we're forcing them to take the money.
Understood.
And
okay.
Paying taxes is not really too bad, because that means you're getting a payment.
You're still getting money.
Yes, exactly.
Just to read for, you know, we addressed this comment to Scott, and his response to it was, and I'm reading now from his memo, if you don't mind.
Yep.
While it may not be absolutely clear in the plan, I believe that the intent of the language is to distribute the entire amount that can be distributed as soon as is reasonably possible following the next valuation date after termination. We should not allow a former member to use our plan as an investment plan once they have left. Okay? So we had some questions on that. Since they weren't of retirement age, could they take money out of the retirement plan? But since it's not a defined benefit, it's a share plan, which we're going to balance out every year, the opinion is that they would get the payment when they left.
So basically, once Doug's firm takes care of the share plan valuation at the end of each year, we're going to look at those people that are vested and have left and say, okay, we got to start paying them out their share plan, essentially. We'll do that all at that same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It's at the valuation date. They right. still would wait till the valuation date.
Once we get all the calculations done. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And right. the years of vesting is still 5 years, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If you have 4 years in right. and you leave, you get nothing.
So 5 years, you get the payout on your share plan.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're not here for 55, you don't get the regular pension after that.
You still have to wait until whatever date
you have to wait for 50.
Yeah, well, and you can pick either the early retirement or the normal retirement.
Right. So. Well, let me ask this question. This doesn't violate like retirement. They would have to pay the penalty for early withdrawal on a retirement fund on their share plan portion?
No, there's no early retirement. The only penalty, so to speak, would be the tax.
Right, which is expected, but it's taxable income.
It's because it's a 457 plan. Okay. 457 monies can be taken out of the plan really at any time without a penalty. Okay. Like for instance, if you have a working, like the city has a 457 plan that you can contribute to while you're working. Mm-hmm. If you leave the city, even if you don't retire, let's say you're between jobs, you can make withdrawals out of your 457 plan. You just pay the normal income taxes on it. Okay. There's no penalties to do it.
Okay.
Any other comment on this? Anybody want to make a motion? Do we need to make a motion on this, do you think, or not? Or
just maybe just to formalize it, a motion to approve that that interpretation of the plan.
Anybody want to try that?
Based on what he read.
Based on the comments that we have from Scott with regard to payment for an individual not of retirement age who is vested and is leaving participation that his share plan value be paid to him
at the next valuation date.
At the next valuation date.
I'll make the motion to accept the interpretation.
Did you get something like that in the minutes, did you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's really the key.
And I'll second it.
All right, seconded. Any comment? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All right, thank you. The next issue, again, dealing with the share plan. in the distribution process on who is going to have share plan value for the year 2015. Remember, the first payments we got were all from 2002 to 2014, right? And whoever served within that period of time was not eligible for 2015 and further payment.
Right.
we had the way the ordinance was read or written, there was some debate in there whether or not, and what we're talking about now is Bob Wieners. You recall Bob Wieners was with our organization for quite a while. He retired and he passed away, and that happened in 2009, I think, or something like that. So he was a part of the initial distribution of what do we call them, what kind of retirees? Eligible retirees. And specifically it says eligible retirees have no further distribution after 2014. And Bob fell in that category, but because of the word, not deceased, but his
beneficiary,
there was an interpretation that, well, he was entitled to go on further into 2015. And then Scott and I have had another conversation, and Scott made a determination, interpretation of the ordinance that no, he was not entitled to a further distribution for 2015.
But the beneficiary.
His beneficiary. Not entitled.
Right.
Right.
So what we'll do here, well, go ahead, Scott, say your part.
I was just going to say, basically, the eligible retirees, remember, were the people that were already retired. And we had a piece of money that, from the share, when we first started the share, we had a big hunk of money that we distributed to all the eligible retirees, okay? That amount was determined at that point, all right? And so if Mr. Wieners had not passed away, he would have gotten that amount of money, right? Okay, well, he passes away. Does it make sense then that his beneficiary would get more money than he would have gotten had he lived? Okay, and that's kind of the overall thought here, is it just didn't make sense. And I think it's supported by the language, because it specifically says in the plan, on each valuation date, each current member of the plan and each recent retiree, not eligible retirees, and that's what he was, beneficiary, and that's the confusion, because the word beneficiary is there, or terminated vested person, but then it says who is otherwise eligible for an allocation. Okay, and my interpretation was he wasn't eligible for an allocation. She wasn't eligible for an allocation, because she's only stands in the shoes of her deceased husband. Mm-hmm. So that's the interpretation, and I think that's the only, frankly, the only interpretation that makes sense.
And Scott gave us a letter on that, and that interpretation is well stated here.
Well stated, I appreciate that.
Doesn't say he agreed with it.
Yeah, he agreed with it.
Say only because he agrees with it.
Yeah, he agrees with it.
Again, is this something we have to?
Yeah, let's just we could actually
we accept
just
the interpretation.
Accept the interpretation of the benefit for Mr. Wiener
and his beneficiary.
Beneficiary.
Again.
I'll make that motion.
Yeah. I'll second it.
Virginia, do you have it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't wait to see these minutes.
Any comment? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
So practically what yes. We'll do as the actuary is we've held an allocation for her with this last share update.
Yeah, she wasn't paid. We discussed this before that payment would have gone out to her, and I guess that's what you're talking about, reallocating.
Right, when we do the next share update, we'll take those monies and redistribute to everybody, and that would include, there's certain people who were paid out in 15 but would not get something in 16. Anybody who got a distribution or an allocation in 15 will receive a part of the Wieners allocation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I've got a note, we'll take care of that. So.
When you're talking about, this was your spreadsheet, and that's what kind of was, in this particular instance, the tip-off that, you know, something was,
yeah, we'll didn't expect. We'll get an asterisk at the bottom of that chart next
week. Yes. Yep. It'll be in the annual report, too.
Okay. Now,
reflected.
Any other question on this? Okay. Last item that I have on
Charlie, I'm sorry.
Yes.
As it relates to the previous item, which is the payout of the 5-year vested people that may have a share plan balance, was there anybody that was in that situation that we need to look at those?
I think so. Okay, and the one I'm thinking of is Richard Kosick. He was vested with us, and then he left us, and he went to
Benel. Benel?
Okay. So he became a full-time firefighter somewhere else?
No, he's a volunteer.
He's a volunteer.
He's a full-time in Marion County, and he volunteers in Benel.
Okay.
But in any event, he had or would have had some value from those shares, and I've got to look at it and kind of pull that out. But even if it wasn't anybody now, further down the line, it's going to happen, so we might as well kind of address it.
Yeah, because I was just thinking if there was anybody, we probably should make sure we have that ready for the board to approve that distribution, probably at the next board meeting, whoever those people are.
I'll dig that out.
Okay.
There's a couple of them, but I wanted the principle and concept settled.
Okay.
And along with that, you should probably make sure they know they have to write or pay taxes on this, because you don't want them to go out and buy a car and then at the end of the year.
They'll take taxes out of it.
Yeah.
They'll do it withholding when they give them the money.
Yeah, and the payments that we got.
They get a packet from the plan that says, you know, hey, you're eligible for this, give us your tax information, and I think it talks about the withholding, because you asked some information about withholding in that packet.
Well, it does. In the letter we got of distribution, it said that there was tax.
20%?
Because it's a lump sum distribution. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Allocation method. I know where you're going.
Yeah, I don't want to go here.
Go back. We have to go back now to the time when we were only a defined benefit thing, but what was chasing us, no matter what we did, was we had more than enough money for the defined benefit program, and since the funds that we had that were in excess of the frozen amount, it was qualified to be only for the benefit of the individual members. Then we started looking for another way to be able to pay this out without incurring a risk to the city, because we didn't want to increase the defined benefit. So we said, okay, we're going to do a share plan. That was Scott, and it was Doug, you were in on that. And who was
Paul, maybe?
Yeah, Paul. And Paul. And then we started talking share plan. And it turns out that we couldn't structure a share plan because it hadn't been done before for a volunteer organization. So we needed then to go to another consultant, which was, in this case, Ice Miller.
Tax.
You recommended.
Tax attorney, right.
Tax attorney. Mm-hmm. To do what is it that we could do that would keep us in IRS compliance. And even if we heard it, we would have to apply for a letter of what?
Special ruling? Private ruling?
Private letter ruling. Which is what we did. You recall that took about a year, and we finally got the okay for that.
And so, I keep it with me at all times.
This is a trip down memory lane.
Right. Yeah. So we invested in the share plan. And then we started talking about how will we make distribution on this money, right? And if you remember, the first thing we had to do was go from inception, let's say 2002, up to the point where we were ready to make share plan distributions, which was 2014. Okay, and we had something like $1.5 million to deal with on that in share plan money. It was determined that the $300,000 of that would go to the city for
reserves.
Reserve. So that left us 1.2. And then we said, how will we make this distribution? And we said, look, anybody that qualifies, after 2014, by the way, we're going to have yearly distributions on this. From 2002 to 2014, we hadn't made any distributions. We were accumulating money at that time, so we had to make a distribution on that. And what we said was, hey, let's determine the number of qualified years that we have. And each one of those qualified years will convert to a share. And every share will be of equal value. Remember that? The share plan concept was equal value shares for all qualified.
for the period 2002 to 14 and subsequent years, because now we were going to go and make payments every year. So for the initial distribution, 2002 to 2014, we had 1,000,002, and we had 272 qualified years for all that period of time. So we took the 1,000,002 divided it by 272, and we came up with a equal share value, excuse me, right here. This divided by the number of qualified years that existed gave us $4,428. Okay? So we said, okay, now, up to 2014, every year, we're going to look at those that are qualified, and they're going to wind up with $4,400, all the way out to 2014. Okay? So in any given year, no one got more money than somebody else. Here's a guy that's got 15 years or 16 years or whatever it is, and for this year, 07, he got $4,400. Here's a guy that was in 2 years, but he qualified for this year. He got $4,400. You remember when we made the point of that, we wanted equal shares. If a guy was a part of the earning power for that particular year, that we would share equally. Okay? So we have people, this is another issue, that served 3 years, they qualified, but they never vested. So at some point in time, this year, $12,000 is going to fall out, and it's going to be distributed to the people who qualify. Here, we had a guy, say, up to 2014, who had 3 years in, and we think he's going to stay for 15 and 16, but he's going to qualify. Right? So this stands pat. Here's a guy who qualified for 6 and 7, but he missed 8, and he picked it up again in 9 and 9. Well, he got nothing here. So in every case, we wound up with equal share for a value. Then we got to 2015. And Doug came up with an interpretation again of the writing, and Scott agreed with Doug, that a process by which we no longer would have even distributions. Because you would take in the accumulated years from that. If you were in for 10 years, you got credit for 10 years into 2015. So we started with this formula with numerator and denominator, and it turns out that by no stretch of the imagination in 15 did we wind up with the concept that we wanted, which was equal share value for everybody that qualified for that given year. So in order to pursue or continue on with this, using that concept, either we have to make another interpretation of the paragraph in the ordinance, or we have to change the ordinance. You said, right?
That's not what I said. I don't think you can interpret the language any differently than what we're doing.
I just said it.
Okay. No, you said we can interpret it.
I said,
to
can
say
we interpret
to
it? Well, okay. And you told me already, no,
right.
can't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm throwing that anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, you asked me to confirm. I'm not going to confirm something I didn't say.
Yeah. Yeah. Jingle, when you read that line. In any event.
A discussion ensued. That's all it says.
I like that.
So you know, the intent of this whole thing was to use the pension plan as a device for recruitment and retention. And if we go by the present formula, for a given year, we will have, for 2015, an individual coming in who qualified for 2015, and he'll get $1,600 for that year. If we have somebody who's been with us for a while, say 10 years, for that same year, qualified year, they get $16,000. And that's not the concept that we had. That's not how we developed this, and not how we wanted to make the share plan work. Because you can see, we followed that concept here. For every year, whether you were in for 10 years, 12 years, if you had a guy who was qualified in there for just the 1 year, for that qualified year, got the same thing. And I think that's how that should apply to future years.
Well, yeah. That was determined based on going back to inception of the plan, and that's how it was developed. Hey, here's a dollar amount divided by the qualified years of service. That amount ensued, you know, the $4,400. Mm-hmm. Everyone got that per year of service. Yeah. Moving forward, what you're saying is the same interpretation is going to apply, correct? Mm-hmm. So if this person has 10, this person has 3, this person has 2, whatever that total amount that's available for that year divided by their total years of service, or you're trying to say you want it to read only this year?
Yes.
He wants to do an equal split of the money that we have to allocate each year.
So if there's 25,000 and you have 25 people qualify, everybody gets 1,000.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how long you have or haven't been in the plan.
But is that the way it's written?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. So,
so if we want to change it, we have to change the orders.
Right.
To me, it's that simple.
And by the way, if we go that route, it would be for 16. Checks have already been paid from the 15, right. So it would have to start
going forward. Can only make a perspective. Right. We can't redistribute money before.
So the person who's been in for a year, if you say, hey, in 10 years you would get this type of money put into your retirement, it's a thank you for their service of 10 years. I understand what you're saying, but then. So at, let's say, the $1,000 example, instead of getting $1,000, this person may get $400 and this person may get $1,800,
right.
Mm-hmm. Based on years of service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of a privilege for putting all those years of service, and I believe that's why it was initially written the way it was. Does that make sense?
It's not the concept I had.
Okay, but that's the concept you had and the concept the board had may be two different things, but what I'm saying is the way it was written, it was clear up front.
Well, not really. I don't think we really spent that article was written by Ice Miller. And my interpretation was we balanced out at the end of 2014 to zero.
Okay.
All right. We used up all the money and we distributed it evenly.
Right, right.
Nobody ever got more for a given year.
Because we included.
Charlie, that's the same method.
Yeah.
It's the same. That's the same method as what we're doing going forward. Because in your example here, this guy that had all these years of service,
right.
We had a total amount of money.
Yeah.
And so we added up all the years of service, right. For the bottom number, right. In the fraction.
Right.
And the top number is the years of credited service that individual had. And that fraction of the total is what they got. And that's what we're doing going forward.
No, sure it is. No, every year is adjusted.
I'm not talking about every year. No. Yeah. When we first did it, we had a lump sum amount of money.
Yeah.
And we counted the years of credited service that each person had that was going to get it. And they got a fraction. The fraction being their total years of credited service over the total years of credited service of everybody. And that's what the calculation was, right, Doug?
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case.
That's what was done.
Okay. In this case here, we're talking about...
You're saying you don't want to do that going forward, and that's fine. But to me, it comes out to be the same thing that you're talking about here. You're looking at it differently, but the effect of what we did is really the same thing as what you're talking about here. For the lump sum, right?
I don't think so.
Algebraically, it's the same.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think so, because...
Charlie, the difference would be, is in any one of those years, in the past years, let's say there was 25 people and there was only $3,000 available in year one. They would have split $3,000. They wouldn't have got $4,400 for that year.
No, exactly right.
But the second year, no. So what you're doing, the point you're trying to make, but what you're doing there is not really what would have happened under what your suggestion is. It would have been if there is any money available in a particular year, those people that have qualified years of service would split it equally. It wouldn't have come to $4,400 a year.
Right.
It would have been all over the place. It was some years higher, some years lower. It would have been all over the place.
And it's based on vested years of service.
We kept using the formula, and the numerator would always be larger for the people who were here. What we're doing now is saying, okay, the numerator is 10 over the number of people. All right? So the guy with 10 years, and hey, you've done it. Your spreadsheet gave us this here. Guy, 1 year. Okay, and this plan is for what? Recruitment and retention. We want to get new people in.
Right, recruitment and retention. Retention means long term.
The longer you stay, the bigger the money.
The longer you stay, the bigger the piece of pie.
I already got you captured. Yeah, why do I have to give you more than I give a guy?
Because that's the retention portion.
Yeah,
That's the retention portion.
Retention portion is under defined benefit. That's where this part comes in for the number of years that you have is under the defined benefit thing, and nobody's changing that. I'm just talking about the share plan where we said for a given year, anybody if it qualifies, particularly if we're talking about 1 year only. Why do we have one guy who did the same thing as everybody else? Making 1,600 and somebody else making 16,000.
Because the
16,000 guy is already making more money.
He did the same as everyone else for 1 year. The other persons did it for 10 years.
And he got paid.
He got 10 times as much.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying, if you make this change, Charlie, you're looking at you could technically have somebody go back and change that whole thing. You know, we paid a lot of money to attorneys and to the IRS to interpret it. Yeah. We've all interpreted it. It was voted on. It was passed. And now you're trying to ruffle feathers for something moving forward that I think is unnecessary.
Why is it ruffling feathers?
I'm saying you're going to go for an ordinance change, which means you have to present all this to the county or the city commission and the mayor and go for votes and write an ordinance and do it to the state. What I'm saying is the way it's written, it takes care of both recruitment and retention. You know, if you work for a company for 25 years, you would not expect to have the same retirement as a guy who just started yesterday.
No, and you don't. Your defined benefit takes care of that.
Right, I understand that. But what I'm saying is if you're selling the share plan as a recruitment and retention portion, that's how you say, hey, the longer you stay with us, the more benefits you would receive. And that's with any company in the world. Stock options, everything.
And I look at it and say, well, you know, why the hell should I do that? When I've qualified for this year, and that's what we're doing. Every year you're clearing base. You're not accumulating anymore. If we did it the other way and said, okay, you know what? We made a 14-year distribution. Next 5 years we'll make a distribution. Then I can see what we're doing. But not on a one-year basis because you're zeroing out.
Right. It means that distribution will be less. You're not going to have a 14-year lump sum.
No. What you've got is $18,000. $180,000, and you got 23 people that qualify. So one guy gets $1,600, and the other guy gets $16,000.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. What if next year there's only an $8,000 distribution?
But the bottom line is, philosophically, how do you want to do it?
Okay.
Yeah. The way we're doing it now is we're doing it in line with the language that's in the plan, based on years of credit service. And I'll tell you, we have share plans all over the state. So it's not specific to your plan. And the ones that I do, most of them are based on years of credited service. When I say that, that means the fraction where your years of credited service over the total years of credited service, and you apply that against the amount of money that's available for that's been allocated to the share plan.
In other words, we have lots of plans, but that's
what the ordinance says now. But that's not to say that you can't change the allocation method going forward. And if you want to do what Charlie suggests, to give everybody an equal piece of whatever money is available, you can certainly do that. But frankly, it's not up to the board to decide this. It's really up to the membership.
Right.
So you guys need to talk about this, and if the membership wants to do it and we want to propose a change, I mean, it's the money is there for your membership, so your membership ought to decide the allocation method you want to use. So, like I said, I don't think it's the board's job to suggest this. Charlie can certainly explain what the proposal is, and if you want to do it, we can certainly change the methodology going forward. There's no problem with that at all. But I think we did what we set out to do initially, and I think what we put into the plan was what I understood we wanted to do. And so if y'all want to change it, we can certainly change it.
So the basically the just to simplify the two theories, One is going forward, that the guys have been, guys and gals that have been around longer get a bigger piece of
bigger money. Piece, exactly.
And the new people that haven't been around as long get a lesser piece going forward with the share plan. Or everybody gets the same piece.
Right.
Take I mean, that's basically the two right. theories.
The current way it's written is years of service.
Basically, yes, the people that are here longer get a bigger piece is the way it's currently written.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, like I said, if the membership wants to change it and want to propose a change, just let us know. We'll do an ordinance and we'll change the methodology going forward. It's that simple.
That's not a board decision, is what you're saying.
Gosh, I don't know why it would be a board decision. Why should you? Why should the five members of the board decide how it's going to be allocated? Ultimately, it's got to go to the city to be adopted by the city. Mm-hmm. And if I'm sitting on the city commission or council, the first question I said, is the membership okay with this?
Yeah, and the last thing you want to do is present an ordinance to city council that the membership is
coming. Have all the membership
with
the
we don't agree with this.
I think you definitely want the membership to be on board with the change. Mm-hmm. And if they're on board with the change, we'll make the change. It doesn't make a bit of difference to the city because it doesn't change the cost of the plan. All it is taking the amount of money that's going into the share plan and it's just divvying it up differently.
And you really don't want a conflict between the groups coming before city council because then you're going to be forcing them to make the decision about what they think the best
thing
is going to
be.
Then you're taking it completely out of your hands and city council will say, well, we think it should stay the way that it is or we think it should be done this way.
I definitely think we ought to have the membership make a decision on this and go from there.
I was looking from the other side. You've got an ordinance already that stipulates how it's going to be done.
Right.
Right? Right. And that works out to be an uneven distribution. But nonetheless,
right.
that's solid. So right. if you left it that way,
right.
then there'd be no question by any council members it wouldn't have to go anywhere else. However, in my estimation, it violates the intent of our plan, particularly with respect to share plans, because in the beginning, we said equal distribution of shares, and that's how we got
based on the years of service.
No, it wasn't based on years. Based
on you're telling me a check for somebody who had 10 years was no different than a check for somebody that had 5 years of retirement. Yes, of course it was.
Over here,
I understand your thing, but what I'm saying is
it's the same thing.
So the person with 17 years of service, their check was no different than you're saying. If we'd have done it originally and changed this translation, then.
Yeah.
The checks would have been drastically different.
Yes, they would.
Right. Yeah. So why is it an issue now that we've already distributed $1 million?
Yeah.
You want to make a change after $1.2 million has already been distributed. So does that mean we have to go back and recoil and ask for refunds?
No, because where I want it to be is where we are right now.
Yeah, but we had a flat figure on that amount.
We had cumulated figures.
No, you had you had a flat number to start from. Now it varies per year, so of course the number is going to vary. You know, you're not saying every year.
The number is going to vary, but not among the shareholders. Each share is going to be the same value.
So you're saying 272 years, we could have just went year by year and said, okay, you get a year, you get a year. Yeah. Okay.
And these guys here would have been a lot better off, quite frankly, because every year, depending upon the number of years they had, they would be making more money.
Or less.
These would be less, and these would be more.
Maybe. But I'm saying is, so you're saying you could have went back from the beginning and whatever the excess was per year, you would have had to say, okay, this year we had this many people. And then this year we had this many people qualify. You know, and you would have never had your formula.
Yeah, it did. That's when we got to the formula.
No, you had
retired qualified years, 180. Active qualified years, 92. So we wound up with 200.
That's a cumulative total. But what you're saying is go per year and see who's eligible.
Yeah.
So that cumulative total would have been irrelevant. If you would have went per year.
One equal value, it didn't make any difference because using that formula, everybody got an equal share.
Using a cumulative total. That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you would have went back and you would have put out, here's our excess for 2002, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Here's who qualified for 2003, 4, 5, 6, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Those numbers would have been drastically different.
Yeah.
And it may have benefited, it may not have benefited. You know? But
we didn't do it for that reason. We did that in order to make it every year.
To be fair for cumulative totals.
That's right.
So how's it not fair in the future for cumulative totals when it was fair for everyone in the past?
I don't understand your comment, because you're doing the same thing.
Currently doing the same exact formula that you figured out, but you want to change that.
If we don't change it, everything's going to be different. There's not going to be any even distribution at all.
And there shouldn't be. If somebody puts in 20 years of service.
Okay. Well, that's why you get the defined benefit.
We're talking about share plan.
Huh?
We're talking about only share plan.
Yeah, we're talking about share plan.
You're saying that someone who put in 20 years of service to your organization is no more of a benefit to your organization than the person who put in
a year. And said, we're going to wind up doing it on the annual basis, and we're going to share. Everybody that was qualified for that year is going to share the same amount.
I understand the process. I just don't understand your reason behind it. I disagree with the process.
I think it doesn't give us the recruitment tool we're looking for.
But the defined benefit plan does that, according to your argument.
Well, yeah. You should share that with the share plan. Everybody should have the equal amount.
The share plan is a bonus structure, for lack of a better term.
Right, it's an excess reserve, is what it is.
I understand
and
that.
And finally, we're going to get to the point where we're not even going to be able to sustain that.
But you recruit people with the defined benefit plan. You don't recruit with the what if. What if the market crashes and we lose all this money and there's never a distribution on the share plan? You can't recruit on that.
Right, and when you signed up for the defined benefit plan, you knew cumulatively you were going to do better than somebody that came in years later. But we're not dealing with that money anymore. We have an excess reserve that we want to pair off every year.
Right. I think we should table this discussion until we can include the membership with it and be done with it.
Well, I have no problem with that.
Because no one here can make that decision and vote, because we're just going to hit heads.
Yeah, it's really going to, it's a tough one. It's really going to come down to most people, Charlie, I think, as a general rule, when you talk about any kind of retirement plan, the people that have been there longer get more. It's just kind of the natural feel, whether it's true, always true or not, but that's just the way it feels.
I mean, when I was in the corporate world, my plan was based on basically my salary, and I got a certain percentage against my salary. Well, if you made less than me, you got less in your plan, I got more in my plan.
Right. And that sometimes the higher salaries were based on longevity.
Right.
You've been there longer, you're making more money, so you wind up getting more of the pot.
And the percentage increased as you had, as the IRS would allow, and you were able to match it more often as well.
Yeah. So it really is a philosophical discussion about, that. And I do agree with Scott. You definitely want to be a united group if we're going to make any change.
I think it's going to end with anyone who's vested in over 5 years is going to go this way, and anyone who's in new is going to be like, yeah, I agree with that, but they're not vested and they can't even vote on our floor. So, it's kind of a sticky situation. But I think any person in our entire membership, if you said, hey, if we were going to distribute something to you, do you think you should get more after X amount of years of service or the same as the guy who walked in the door? You know the answer to that.
Yeah, but we had this discussion before,
and
which is why we agreed to equal shares.
What was voted on, agreed, passed, and approved by the IRS was what the membership agreed to, which is what this is and what we're moving forward with. Now you're trying to change what they do.
No. The course of action that we took was based on up to 2014. We didn't know what was going to happen in 2015.
Yeah, we did. We said it would be distributed based on years of service and what was excess.
Didn't say that.
It's always been said that way. Always.
Not when we did the share value. The share value was equal shares. That's when we started for the first 14 years. It was equal share.
The confusion is that
the guy who had 10 years didn't make any more than the guy who had 2 years in that 14-year period.
But that's incorrect.
But I think that was based on a lump of money, and this was a benchmark to start it off.
Well, they're all benchmarks. They're all a lump of money. You got $180,000 that you're trying to square away for the year of 2015. So you had $1.5 million that you were trying to square away for the 14 years from 2002 to 2014. We can either stay with what we have, or we can go to the membership. And if we said we didn't want to go to the membership, we're going to stay with the ordinance, then we don't have to go anywhere, right?
You don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything.
Okay. So the question, and if we don't do anything, obviously we continue to do what we're doing based on years of service. But if it's presented to the membership and the membership agrees, yes, we'd like to make the change and do equal distribution of whatever money's available each year, equal allocation to the member share accounts, we can certainly make that change. That's no one. Interestingly enough, the way you're looking at it, you can look at it the same way and you're still doing years of credited service because you're taking that lump sum.
Exactly.
And the guy that has 15 years is going to get 15 over whatever the total years are. And the guy that has 2 years is going to get, or has 6 years, he's going to get six over the total years of credited service. So it's based on years of credited service, the lump sum that we actually did it. So we use that methodology, but looking at the way you're looking at it per year of credited service, that actually works too, because you're getting an X amount for each year of your credited service, but you've got 16 of them, whereas the other guy's got five, so he gets less. So it really works out the same way. The methodologies work out the same way, but going forward, obviously, you have a different...
Yeah, when you talk about total distributions.
Right, exactly. Right. For going back
to the people that were there longer got more, and the people that had less got less.
So more per year, but that's the same thing as based on years of credited service.
Yeah. So if we look back to the 2002 to 2014, why did we not divide that number by the number of personnel?
Yeah.
So everyone got an equal share. Because that's what you want to do now. You want to divide it by number of personnel.
No.
That's exactly what you want to do now. So why did we not, from 2002 to 2014, divide it by number of personnel that would be qualified for this distribution? Because it would have been like 50 or 60 or whatever it might have been. And everyone would have got an equal share.
How do you figure that?
If you took the total amount that we had, 1,000,002, and we had 50 people that were going to get shares.
Yeah.
We divide the 1,000,002 by 50, and everybody gets the same amount.
Right.
Regardless of their years of credited service.
Everybody would have got more.
The 4,400 was
some people would have got more, some people would have got a lot less.
The 4,400 was based on pot of money divided by total years.
Right, I understand. Yeah.
Now, going forward, if you do it on a year-by-year basis, you get the same answer. If you divide by the number of people or the number of years for that year, you get the same answer. But it's going to be a different methodology if we go with the way Charlie's suggesting.
Well, Charlie's basically saying
the initial allocation was divided by number of years. That's where you got the 200. There weren't 272 people in the plan.
No.
There was 272 years.
That's my argument.
People years.
He's proposing... If there's 25 people and they get 1 year of service for the current year,
right.
So you're basically taking whatever the number is, dividing it by the number of people.
Who got a year that year.
Who got a year that year.
Which is a deviation. And that's a deviation of methodology.
Actually, it's the same thing as saying the credited years.
It's not, because in your plan, in the previous distribution, just follow me here.
Yeah.
If there was 80 people, say, that qualified for a distribution, whether they were current, retired, whatever, okay? I don't know the number, but... And you would have taken that number, divided it by 80, and everyone would have got an equal amount. So you divided it by years of service, which was 272. The dollar amount is the same that's going to be distributed, but how people got it was different. So if you would have divided $1,000,000 by 80 people, everyone would have got X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. Okay? But you did. You divided $1,000,000 by 272 years of service because that's the years that they vested into the plan. Okay? So that's where the 4,400 came from. You're proposing moving forward, taking the number of people, which is 25 that qualify, or 30, whatever it is, divide that into the 180, and everyone gets an equal share.
No, I'm saying the number of people is the number of shares. There may be 40 people in there, none of them qualify. Only 25 qualify.
Okay.
So they got 25
who qualify.
25 years.
But the 25 who qualify don't have 25 years of service.
Correct.
They have 20. They have their sum of years. So the 25 people might have 100 years of service or 200.
Right.
And that's the difference. If you're suggesting to divide only by 25, you're deviating from the original methodology. The original methodology was divide by total years. You're suggesting going forward you divide by 1 year.
Qualified years.
No, the current qualified year, that's all you're proposing.
Yeah.
Right. No.
Yeah, well, that's what these are.
Qualified. No, it's not.
Okay, I got to look this over.
That's again. Cumulative years of service. That's cumulative years of service, everything prior.
I think at this point, this horse is probably dead.
I agree.
Either
I think we should move on.
We vote to stay the way we are, or we vote to bring it to the membership with an explanation of what it is that we're suggesting, one way or the other.
And I'm not sure you guys really have to vote on it.
No, we don't.
It's just a matter of whether, you're going to present.
The only thing moving forward is
we have to, if we stay with the plan we have now.
No, we just stay. It's status quo.
There's nothing to do to stay.
Then I'll motion to table this thing.
I agree.
I think that's probably the better motion, is to table the subject until you get a chance to talk to the membership or figure out.
Or not.
Or not.
Or not. However you want to go about it.
So that's the motion. I think we tabled.
I'll second the table. I mean, I don't know if you need a motion to be quiet, but. So we have motion to table it for now.
You did a motion to table it?
Yes.
And you're going to talk with the membership about?
We don't know.
Well, that's up to you.
Yeah.
For now, it is what it is.
We're not going to talk about it anymore.
Okay. For now, it is what it is. Okay.
Because we're swimming in circles. And
I sat on the qualification sheets, share status sheets that you have for each individual. But we can't change that, so I might as well give that out for this year, right?
Except to wieners.
Hmm?
Except to wieners. Benefits.
Yeah, except to wieners.
Correct. Right. Everything
Excuse
else
me,
is fine.
Can we go back to the motion? Is there a unanimous decision to table it?
We haven't taken a vote yet. The first and second, no one's called for a vote yet.
Okay. So is this related? That's why I'm asking. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, all right. The motion to table it?
Yes.
Yeah, I first.
Yep.
Or he's first, whatever.
Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Well, that...
That was going to say a vigorous discussion.
That was time-stamped all over the
And please make sure I was here for that.
A couple of times. A couple of times. You only get one vote, though.
Yeah. All right, will we agree then that the data sheets for individuals for the year 2015 be distributed?
Yeah. Other than wieners.
Okay, if we have to change it, or if it stays the same.
But wieners is the one that needs to be fixed.
Well, yeah, no, I'll take him out. Yeah, that was a separate issue.
Yeah.
Can we distribute those in a sealed envelope, please? If you're going to put it in people's mailboxes.
Each mailbox. You want to seal them?
Yes.
Okay. Any other issues from the trustees? Any visitor have any comments? No. Any comments?
Just join the show.
You picked a good day to come.
I did.
With that said, I make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second the motion.
All right. Done.